Everybody and their grandma loves it. Let's make our flavor so we can get a piece of that turd.
All right. We're back.
Hello. We have returned.
We're missing one, though.
Yeah,
Ryan's not with us tonight.
He broke his leg.
He talks out of his leg.
Yeah. So without that, he can't do this cast anymore because, you know, they say whenever you have a broken leg, it sets up stuff in your esophageal area. And then when it does that, the vibrations, they don't happen in your throat. So you can't actually speak. And it's proven fact, science. But because of that reason, he's not here.
You really do need an anatomy book, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. So what's going on,
yeah,
man?
Yeah. You know, it's same old, same old. Yeah, I've got some stuff that we could talk about without Ryan. We're going to talk about Ghostbusters Afterlife, but we're going to wait for him so that we can all three talk about it. We've been planning to talk about that for a bit. But yeah, he's on assignment. So he gave us permission to go ahead and record. So that's what we're doing. So yeah, I guess we'll start with like some follow-up. Valve showed off the final case and packaging for the Steam Deck. Did you see that?
No, I did not. Full disclaimer, Ryan's leg is not broke, for anyone who cares. Just want to make sure it's clear.
As far as we know.
Yeah, I mean, it could be now. Like, I could have jinxed him. Something could have happened. Twisted his leg, trying to poop or something. But anyway, so no, I did not see the packaging for the Steam Deck at all.
Yeah, it's really nice packaging. I mean, kind of looks like a shoebox. And then inside the shoebox is the case with the, I almost said the Switch, with the, what's that thing called? Steam Deck inside the case. And then it looks like there's another box to the left of the Steam Deck case, which I imagine is like charger box probably.
Yeah, it literally does look like a shoebox. I'm looking at the picture now.
Yeah, yeah, it does. And like it just like when I was looking at it, I'd seen it before, but just now looking at it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that looks like a shoebox. I guess that's the best description for it.
That's hilarious.
But it's a shoebox with a lot of different languages on it.
Yeah, this is like a shoebox for like Cinderella, the only one slipper. It's slender. But that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I really think the case looks really nice, and I think it's pretty awesome that it comes with a case. I think every version of this. So this is on Rock Paper Shotgun. I'll put a link in the show notes, but yeah, every version, the 64 and the 256 comes with the case pictured above, and yeah, they have a picture in the post. It's a nice like form fitting neoprene case. The top of it actually has like cutouts for the D-pads and everything. So everything's like pretty form fitting, which is nice. Like my Switch case is just kind of like one tier level at the top. It just opens up and that's it. So it's nice that it kind of like, you know, babies your control sticks and stuff. I'm still interested to see what the 512 case is going to look like, though.
Is it supposed to be different?
Yeah, like everything with the 512 is like premium. You know, because it's like, ooh, that's a super nice one.
Yeah.
So they had said that, yeah, it's going to be a different case, but I don't know if it's like the same case and then it's got like some embroidering on it to make it like, you know, make you feel special, or if it actually is a different case. They don't really say in this article. I feel like they did show off what could possibly be the premium case, but a while back when they were first showing the Steam Deck off, but there's nothing here in this article.
Yeah, since the I'll be completely honest, since they did the pushback, I for those who don't know, they delayed it obviously for the release. It was supposed to be this month, the start. Since they delayed it.
Yeah, now it's going to be February.
Yeah. Since that, I have not, I've really actually not been engaging any more of the articles because I feel like it's just going to be a surprise whenever it finally decides to ship. Just given the state of where the world is right now. But this picture, am I crazy? Or did they change? That's not like gunmetal, or is it just the lighting of the picture? It's not.
Of the Steam Deck?
Yeah, because I thought it was a solid black, and this picture makes it almost have that gunmetal grayish look to it.
Yeah, it really is kind of hard to tell from the photo. I think that's probably some light hitting it, but it may be a bit lighter than we expect it to be. But no, I don't think it's like gunmetal. I think that's the lighting.
Okay. It would look good, gunmetal. Now, seeing it in this light, it'd look kind of cool.
Yeah, and also, there's not really a lot of that reflection of that light on the screen either. So, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell. This could be a render too.
Yeah,
but it doesn't look like it.
So it looks like in the box, it looks you're just gonna get the Steam Deck, the case, and charging cable, and that's pretty much it, right? So it looks like.
Yeah, it looks about it. I mean, that's all you need. Either that box is really big, or it makes the Steam Deck look small.
You know, that's a good point. Because it's got to be like a single wide shoe. Because I mean, if you look at your hands, it's only going to be a little bit wider than your hands, right? So,
I mean, I guess, yeah. Unless you're playing like a skateboard, you got hands on each side. Like ape hangers on a big motorcycle.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they haven't said anything more either about they at one point were talking about making a Valve dock for this. I guess they haven't really brought that up anymore.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything definitive showing that off. They're probably still working on it. And then honestly, with the part shortages and stuff, they're probably like, well, just focus on getting this out the door and then we can work on that. Maybe you'll be able to get one in 2023.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really curious to see what kind of power this thing can really push. I wonder if I can throw a ZBrush on it. Oh no, it wouldn't support that OS.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to install Windows on it.
I'm not doing
and
that.
And then, it would probably burn your fingers because it would nuke the GPU.
Yeah, that's something you and I have talked about multiple times. I know a lot of people are saying that, okay, just throw Windows on it, you know, wipe it whenever you get it. I think you and I are in agreement that that's probably not going to be optimal by any means.
Yeah. Like you said, we were talking about it offline the other day. I'm going to let somebody blaze that trail. And then once it becomes so well documented and, you know, supported by the community that it's easy, I might do it if there's a game that I would like to play. But for me, like, are you going to dual boot? And then you're taking up more storage space, right? You're losing more storage space between SteamOS and Windows. So it's probably close to 100 gigs, I would imagine, between the two of them. So, we both got the larger one, so it's like 400 gigs left for games and stuff, which is still some good space, but, you know. But then I just don't think it's going to be very well supported by the hardware. I think that everything, like the UI isn't, I feel like the UI is going to be like kludgy, and it's just, it's not going to be as like console like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, Steam had gone out of their way to say like, this is just a PC. You can do whatever you want with it. It's a PC. That's fine. But like, if it's a handheld device, I don't want to like play around with drivers and, you know, mess with screen resolution and do all this crap. I just want to pick it up, find the game that I want to play on Steam and play it. And play it with friends online, play it on the couch, play it in bed. I don't need to to worry about updating my NVIDIA drivers via GeForce Now on Windows and then have to restart it. And then when I restart it, make sure that I select Windows as the OS I want to boot in, where it might default to SteamOS. And then, oh, now I got to shut it back down again and reboot and then make sure I get it again. Like, I don't know. I don't want that hassle.
You think it's our age? You think we're just getting to the point where, you know, because there's a time, I bet, where we would get this and be like, oh yeah, I want to push it to its limit. I want to install this on it. And now we're like, I want simplicity. I just want to turn it on and use the damn thing.
Yeah. You're doing. It could be that. It's probably partially that, but then at the same time, like, okay, let's rewind me back 15 years younger or something. Let's say I wanted to install Windows on it. Like, I want that to work, and I want it to work well, even when I was younger. And if there's, like, crap that I got to do to, like, well, it doesn't work all the way sometimes in this case, that always frustrated me.
Yeah.
Like, I installed Ubuntu on a laptop way back in the day in college because I wanted that software experience. And that was a pain in the ass back then.
Yeah.
And Ubuntu is, like, actually really good as far as, like, supporting, like, devices. Probably the best consumer. It's not a consumer OS, but, like, as far as ease of use, it's probably the best. And it was still pretty good back then. But that's what this reminds me of like, I'm going to install Windows on this. It reminds me of installing Linux on a laptop back in the day. Like, yeah, I could get it to work. I might have to, like, change some configs and do some stuff. And it worked pretty good when it did. But it was always, like, I wasn't ever sure, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, there might be some maintenance that I need to do. Or if I did an update, maybe that just broke a config change that I made and now it doesn't boot, or now it boots and the resolution's off, or, you know, just some weird stuff like that. I just want to play a game.
And I think it's interesting because when you talk about consoles versus PC, there's, like, a sense of responsibility. And I say that as in, like if I were to build a computer and I launched a game and it ran like crap, I would feel like, oh, I should have built this better, or I need to upgrade this to make it work right. And it's kind of like, it's my responsibility. But if I buy a console, an Xbox, Nintendo, and a game is released for that console and it runs like shit, then I'm going to lose my mind because I feel like it's all developed to be optimal for that. So when it becomes subpar, and you get upset. So I think that's the kind of thing. The Steam Deck, if you throw Windows on it, you try to push the limit, are you really getting your money's worth anymore out of that hardware? You know, if you cheapen it, basically.
I still think you're getting your money's worth out of it, but you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
It could be, like, the Steam Deck's weird, right? Because it isn't a console. It is just a PC, you know, like Steam said. So even though the user experience for it is more console-like, as far as I turn it on, I'm presented my games, I pick the game I want to play, and I play it, it's still like a PC where, depending on what that game is, you might have to tweak settings within the game because it doesn't run as well on the mobile hardware that the Steam Deck has, you know?
Yeah.
So you're still going to have that, like, that configurability, tweakiness that you have to do. But getting you to the game, I think, is where they're trying to make it more like a console. And then the form factor of it as well is very much console like.
Yeah.
So you can play anywhere.
I think it's very interesting how like when you look at the back of that, and obviously it has four, there's four buttons on the back, right? And
yeah,
if you look at like the Elite controllers and even I got those Hori controllers for the Switch, it's funny how everyone's starting to jump on that bandwagon of having back buttons for your other fingers. And it, I mean, it's great, but it is kind of funny because then you look at ease of use for someone picking up new controllers as that becomes, because I almost suspect that'll become a normal thing. And you know how like controllers seem to get more complicated in a sense because people are in a sense growing with it. It's just, it's interesting because it does have a lot of use to it. And it's funny they threw it on the back here because it should accommodate for so much more, but I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. I think that these buttons will actually be better than the buttons on the Elite because the Elite has like detachable paddles,
yeah,
which are nice because you don't have to have them on there, but those buttons, at least for the games that I've played with those are mapped to the face buttons. They're not like extra buttons. You know what I mean? So like they're A, B, X, Y. They're just on the back. And this, I think, is actually separate buttons. Like they're not the face buttons. Unless I'm mistaken, I think they might be Z buttons or something like that. So I think I like that. I like that they're larger. Because I've been playing Halo Infinite multiplayer with the Elite controller, yeah, and those top Elite controller paddles are like super small, and it's weird to try to get my hand and make sure that they get like depressed because they hook in and then they push these little teeny tiny buttons. The paddles push down on these little buttons that are built onto the controller, and sometimes they don't register very well, which is disappointing. But I'm glad they're there, but I think that as far as like triggering, I think that these buttons on the Steam Deck will be better. At least they look like they will be.
Yeah. So like that's actually interesting. So the Hori controllers that I have for the Switch, those buttons concave into, the handle itself versus the paddles on the Elite. They hang out towards the middle is where the actual button is, but they do go on the handle, right? Yeah. I guess that's pretty much the same thing. They're small.
They float around the handle. So you grip towards the handle to get them, but the actual button itself is on the center body of the joystick. Mm-hmm. And there's a little nubbin that's on the back of the paddle. And that's what actually presses into that teeny button. That's about the size of the head of a pencil or a ballpoint pen.
Yeah. There's only one thing that really sucks about those things. And that's someone hits your hand, you're guaranteed to accidentally hit the wrong button. I've had that several times, like a cat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But that's interesting. I look forward to the Steam Deck.
Me too. Whenever we get it. Yeah, so I mean, we were just talking about Halo. There was a little bit of news I thought was kind of interesting, about Battlefield 2042. Yeah, so there's a Halo artist. Let's see, what's their name? Marcus Leto is building a new studio to create new narrative experiences for Battlefield. So what I got out of this RPS article was that they're trying to expand the like lore or story, like expand the reach of Battlefield, which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm not sure. I know that Halo 5 got really poo-pooed for its story, but I like Halo's story in general. I'm not sure the Marcus Leto, I'm not sure who or what stories he worked on, but Halo's a good game. So it's probably a good win for Battlefield. But inside of this article, and what I thought was really interesting is Vince Sampella, who is a co-founder of Respawn. They make Apex Legends, Titanfall, which I know is like one of your favorite games ever. Yeah. Or shooter, at least, ever. He is now going to be like the head honcho overseeing Battlefield.
Hmm.
So I think that's going to be really good for Battlefield. I like Battlefield a lot. I feel like EA has kind of like, sometimes they hit, sometimes they miss when they come out with a new Battlefield. And Apex Legends is a really good game. I like that game a lot. We haven't played that in a while.
Yeah. We should go back and play that.
Yeah, we should. We really should. But anyways, yeah, I think this is a win. I know Vince Zambella, you know, I think that's a really good pickup, and I think that I'm bullish on the direction of Battlefield going forward now that they've got that guy at the helm, and Halo's got good stories. So,
you know, it's kind of sad because if you tell me there was, I'd be like, oh, well, that sucks. So I've played all the Battlefield games, but I don't think I've ever played a campaign in Battlefield. Was there a campaign in 2042?
I don't think in 2042. I don't know. But there has been campaigns in prior Battlefields, I believe.
Well, if they exist, I didn't play them.
Yeah, but like, so how I'm thinking about this, the narrative experiences, is kind of like how Warzone has been doing their battle royale like stories. It's like, oh, new season, new story. Yeah. You know what I mean? I can see them doing that with Battlefield, kind of like Fortnite, yeah. Right? Fortnite's got a story and it's a big battle royale online game. I could see them doing that, but playing it over multiple like seasons of Battlefield.
Yeah.
Which I think would be cool because it plays to the strengths of Battlefield. Like you said, like, oh, did I play a campaign on Battlefield? I don't know. Bad Company had story, right?
You know what?
I didn't really play those, but I'm pretty sure Bad Company, those games had stories. But the strength of Battlefield is playing this giant, you know, multiplayer match.
Yeah, I think that's always been my go-to with Battlefield, because I actually really do like Battlefield. That's why I say I would be really disappointed if you came back and told me, yeah, every Battlefield game's got a campaign, because I'd be like, well, I never touched them. But, I mean, even the same to say with Call of Duty. I don't think I've played a campaign of Call of Duty since 3. Call of Duty 3 on the Xbox 360. Granted, I don't think I've ever really bought into many of the Call of Duty series other than I think 3 of them. But it's just interesting how some of those games, how many times can you recycle the war stories of the same periods?
Yeah. So while you were talking, I looked it up. And yes, there are campaigns in the Battlefield games. Not in 2042. They dropped it. But here's an article from GameGrin.com ranking the Battlefield campaigns. Number 7, Battlefield 2, Modern Combat. Number 6, Battlefield Bad Company 2. Number 5, Battlefield 3.
Oh, man.
4, Battlefield 4. 3, Battlefield Bad Company. 2, number 2 is Battlefield 1. And then number 1 is Battlefield Hardline.
I didn't play. That's funny. I guess I just didn't. I was like, okay, Battlefield, hop on. Multiplayer, done.
Yeah, that's how I've always played them. I may have, like, dipped in one of these campaigns at some point, but I just don't remember.
I think that's kind of what cued some of, okay, if you remember Titanfall, the first game. Did you play Titanfall? Did you play either one of them, one or two?
I have. I didn't back in the day, but in the last few years, I played a couple multiplayer matches.
So the first Titanfall, they removed a campaign, a single player campaign. So whenever you jumped into the multiplayer, there was like kind of like going and riding a Star Wars ride or something. You know, you had your thematical things going on during your multiplayer match, and that's how you kind of progress through a story, but it was through multiplayer. I wonder, because everyone was kind of going through that phase where they were coming out with these almost annual to biannual games, and nobody was really paying attention to the campaigns, if that's why, even like the decision of 2042, they're like, you know what, let's get rid of that, because no one's really playing our games for that reason. Let's be honest with ourselves.
Yeah, maybe. I honestly think a lot of it may have to do with the pandemic, because Halo Infinite doesn't have co-op campaign currently, but it is coming in like March or May. So I think, well, at least in the Halo, in the case of Halo, it was like probably a prioritization of, okay, we want to make sure that the campaign's good, it's polished, don't have any bugs. We don't have time to check out the multiplayer or the co-op. So they probably prioritize that. But yeah, I mean, I know, you know, writing software, I'm sure they have analytics in their games that says like, hey, how many people actually play the campaign? And at a certain point, they're probably like, why are we wasting resources on this when that's not what people want?
Yeah. I mean, I think with the Haloverse, at least 1-3 and Reach and ODST, people were playing it for sure for that story. And the multiplayer was a good even. But Call of Duty, Battlefield, I mean, even the developers have to know, like, hey, we're making something great, but how many people are even going to look at this?
I always played the Call of Duty.
Really?
Campaigns.
Yeah.
They are good. Yeah.
You know, you said that.
A couple that I played, I really liked those.
Yeah. You told me the Modern Warfare one, right? That's the last one you played?
Yes. Yeah. I played, Modern Warfare 2, whatever it's called, Warzone or whatever. I played that campaign that came with that game.
Most modernized warfare is the one that you played.
Yes. the most up to date patched warfare zone.
Yeah, I didn't play that one. I wanted to play that one actually because it did look good.
Yeah, I like them. I mean, they're like, you know, B level action flicks. It's not, you're not going to cry or anything, or at least I didn't. But there's some really cool, like, trippy things that happen in that game that are neat, just like story wise. Call of Duty, I feel like, you know, because there was Call of Duty 3 on the Xbox 360. That was really good game campaign. I've always played those for the campaigns and always played Battlefield for the large multiplayer. And I feel like in recent years, Call of Duty has been like, okay, well, we've got to get like, well, now they're doing like battle royale type multiplayers, I guess, to combat Fortnite and Battlefield. But they always had like the Twitch multiplayer.
Yeah.
Later on. I don't know exactly when that started. But definitely in the modern times. I don't know about World War II Call of Duties and stuff like that.
Call of Duty 2, I remember that on the 360 when that came out. That was definitely a twitchy multiplayer. I remember just turning.
And was it? It was World War II stuff, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, that actually was one of my favorite Call of Duty games for the longest time. I don't know what it was about that one. maybe because it was the first one on the 360 and being like, oh, wow, look at the reflections on this stuff and the details.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, but that ended up being one of my favorites.
Well, speaking of Call of Duty, I guess developers staged a walkout when Activision laid off. Was it Activision? Yeah, Activision laid off a bunch of their QA staff. I thought this was interesting because, again, working in software, like QA is so important because, like, you can be writing code for decades and think that you write the best code in the world, but you have to test it. And me personally, I mean, I test my code, make sure it works when I write it, but to have somebody that's dedicated to that and that to find those issues before you show, you know, that release to the public is crucial. And I support these developers for walking out because what's going to happen is they're going to have less QA. So they're going to have more bugs in their games. So then those developers are going to make a game and then it's going to release. And people are like, this game sucks. These developers suck. You know, the studio sucks. Call of Duty sucks because all these like crazy bugs.
Yeah.
You have to have good QA. And like as a developer, like, it's always like, ah, freaking QA. Like they found another bug.
Yeah, there's safety.
Like now I have to go. Yeah, it's frustrating because I'm like, dang, they found another bug. Yeah. Now I have to fix it. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, thank goodness they found that bug. I can fix it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, especially when you're a public facing business. Like when you're giving something out to consumers to get versus like, hey, I'm developing this for
in-house use. Yeah, they're paying you for it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, 'cause that's a different level of pressure. Okay, sure, drop your QA team if you really, really have to do more with less. If what everything you develop is for your own business and that's it, but you're handing it out to people to buy and use. Come on, you got to have somebody there. Yeah, I couldn't tell. There were some other articles that I seen just scrolling through. I thought initially there was something about contractors or something like that, removing most of the contractors or.
Yeah, that's what it says here. It says on Friday, the studio let 12 contractors go due to restructuring, which is said to be around a third of the QA team. That's a big chunk, 33% of your QA team.
I'm sure they're feeling a lot of heat. There's no doubt. I mean, Activision Blizzard's going through some changes right now.
That's definitely true.
It'll be interesting to see how all that shapes up, and I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, so in the article, Activision responded to Eurogamer by saying that we are growing our overall investment in development and operation resources. We are converting approximately 500 temp workers to full-time employees in the coming months. Unfortunately, as part of the change, we also notified 20 temp workers across studios that their contracts would not be extended. So, I mean, yeah. So it sounds like another studio was contracted to do the work. And so it's people from Raven Studio that were let go. And that's why I guess those people are frustrated.
Yeah, I see.
It's hard to really know, you know, what the intention is of Activision, because it does sound like, okay, hey, you know, they're bringing people on full time. That's a good thing. And
yeah,
you know, stuff happens where, okay, we're hiring 500 people, but these 20 people we couldn't keep or whatever, that stinks. So it's hard to like say for sure, like, oh, boo Activision, but like, they don't have a good track record anymore. You know what I mean? So like they've kind of put themselves in a position where they're going to get judged badly. Even if they're doing something good, if any of it is, has a, you know, a bad look to it, nobody has faith in them. And then Blizzard too, like Blizzard really has just damaged their name as a company. I know when all the stuff came out about the terrible, you know, harassment yeah. and other things that happened at Blizzard, I had just pre-ordered the new Diablo 2 remaster. And I was like, dang, like, if I had known this, I wouldn't have bought the game. I still haven't even played it.
I haven't either.
I mean, I want to just because, like, of the game. But this kind of goes along, you know, this is interesting. I want to talk about this. You and I have had conversations a couple times before about, like, going to see a movie.
Yeah.
For an actor, you know, there's an actor in the movie that is known to be a turd, done some things. And you're like, I don't really, like, for me, depending on the movie, depending on the actor, I'm like, man, I don't want to watch it. Like Tom Cruise, like a lot of Tom Cruise stuff, I can't watch anymore because of all of his like creepy Scientology stuff and things he's done to people that he knows and just this is abusive stuff. This is the thing with Activision Blizzard is kind of like the same thing, but in this case, Activision Blizzard is the actor,
yeah,
and the game is the movie. So it's interesting because it's really the same kind of thing, but it's on a like a group level as opposed to an individual level.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a little easier. It's a little easier to accept. Like, okay, that studio's got some bad stuff that they've been doing. I know not everybody there is bad. So like, I can kind of be like, okay, I'm going to play some Heroes because I know like everybody there is not bad. I knew somebody who worked at Blizzard at one point in time and I worked with him before. He was a good guy. I'm not going to say his name, but I don't think he would have done any of this stuff. He hasn't been there for years. He worked there back when StarCraft II was being worked on. But yeah, it makes me feel the same way where I'm like, I don't want to enjoy this because I feel guilty because I feel like I'm supporting bad behavior and like stuff that I don't support.
Well, and I'm just, cause I'm 100%, I'm with you. And that's where we've had conversations before. Like it.
Oh yeah, I know.
I try to do my best, my absolute best to remove the person from the art, from the character. But at the same time, you have things you got to stand up for too, and what's right and what's wrong, and you want to be part of those movements that make sense. But at the same time, it's kind of like if your favorite NFL team has a quarterback that does some really messed up crap, do you just completely give up on the team?
Packers.
Do you completely give up on the team or do you continue to support the team? You know,
I mean, yeah,
one turd out of the rest of them. But I don't know. It's one of those things that does suck because I do love the Diablo franchise. I do. There's a lot to like about the story and such. And I think that Blizzard in past StarCraft was a big deal for me. I loved the story and stuff in StarCraft. So it hurts to see that this type of stuff happens and you have to put an emotion in between it. You know what I mean? But I hope that they make the right changes, but at the same time with dropping QA and things of that nature, it would really, really hurt them way more if the quality of their games also depreciate harder than what they already kind of have.
Yeah, and by so way more, you don't mean that like the QA being the games being worse is worse than the things they've done. You mean it would snowball
yeah.
and be even worse. Correct. Yeah, even worse. I knew what you meant. I just wanted to clarify.
I just don't want to see them like, okay, hey, we've decided to fix all this stuff internal. All the turds are gone. You know, we're working things through like any other relationship, but the games are completely crap now. So what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, they need to fire on all cylinders for sure. They need to fix the culture problems that they have, and they need to continue to release great games like they have in the past.
Yeah. So Azeron, Diablo 4. We'll see where that goes. And I guess Overwatch 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm interested in Overwatch 2. I feel like it's weird. Because that, I don't know. Do we have to pay for that game? Or is it free? I don't even remember.
What, Overwatch or?
Yeah, Overwatch.
That we bought that game.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. You might not have bought that game.
Did somebody buy it for me?
Maybe.
No. I'm pretty sure I bought Overwatch.
Did you buy that one? I know I got some free copies at one point from subscriptions or something, but I don't know.
I think I signed up for the beta for Overwatch. Like, I was really pumped about that. But anyway, yeah, I think what was weird about Overwatch 2 is that they announced the sequel so soon. Like, during, like the release of Overwatch, I felt like it was only like a year or two, and they were like, Overwatch 2, it's coming.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they announced it like super early, but they've been working on it forever. But the head guy, I can't remember his name, he left. I think we talked about it on the show.
Yes.
He left the team not too long ago, and he was like, to me, he was always doing like the presentations of like, hey, here's the new stuff. So he seemed like, I think he just left for, you know, he wanted to go do something else or retire or whatever. It's not any of this, as far as I know, it's not any of the sexual harassment, bad stuff.
Yeah.
It was a Blizzard. That's not how it was reported, at least. But the fact that he left kind of made me feel like, oh, like, is it going to, like, he felt like the heart and soul of Overwatch. Like, he had the vision for, you know, where the game needed to go. I know it's made by like a ton of people, but you still want to have the leader, you know, the leader that's going to, you know, take that product over the finish line. So yeah, I'm still interested to see, how that does when it comes out.
About it. Hopefully it's refined. I think that game style still is valuable. Other than everybody trying to move to these battle royales, which I seen like there was a Final Fantasy one now and stuff too.
A Final Fantasy battle royale?
Yeah, I think it's set in the Final Fantasy VII remake universe. And that actually was just recently. That came out maybe within the last couple weeks. But yeah, I mean, I think everybody's just trying to get on that bandwagon of that game mode, which I do like those game modes, but it kind of gets a little fatiguing to have that many different variants of that type, you know?
Yeah, whenever a particular or novel game genre gets popular, everybody decides like, oh, we got to make our version of that. Like, deck building games are really popular, or they have been for a bit now. And so like, it's like, oh, I've made an MMO that's a deck building game. Oh, I've made a chess game that's a deck building game. I'm like, okay, like it was cool like when it was novel and somebody just came out with it and like, hey, this is a deck building game, but like, I don't know. I feel like just shimming a mechanic into every genre doesn't improve the genre. Why do that? Like, I don't know.
I think
it's like, I'm going to make a Pong, but it's a deck building Pong. Like, yeah. I totally have like the idea for it right now in my head, where you could build decks and they would give your paddles or the balls different power-ups or like, you know, change modifiers onto the unseen. Like, I could do it. Like, I could design that game. But why?
Okay, so there you go right here. You know, you've got the business answer and then you have the artistic answer, which is what you hope is the actual answer. So the business one, you know, is like, oh, such and such business is making a buttload of money off of this. Everybody and their grandma loves it. Let's make our flavor so we can get a piece of that turd. And then you have the artistic side of it is where you hope that someone like you or me, whatever, was like, I really like this. This is great. I would love to make my own inspired by that mode, but could see an opportunity for something better. You hope that that one's it, but I mean, most of these are just the latter, you know, it's the business.
Yeah. I've totally convinced myself that a deck building Pong game would actually be good. Like just while we were sitting here, like in between matches, you just build out your deck and then like that gives you your bonuses, against the other person every round.
Yeah.
Shit. But yeah, you know, it's always, Mark for marketing is going to come down and be like, hey, they got a deck building doll game. Let's stick it into Battlefield 2034.
Right. Yeah.
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 So
this is how it works. Unfortunately, it's the industry, but I don't know. I think that's what was so refreshing. I'm not going to say that Halo was the only one that jump back into that multiplayer style, because obviously Call of Duty does quite a bit of the same, but the feel and everything of Halo, I don't know, for some reason I felt like Halo Infinite, the multiplayer, came at just the right time.
Yeah, I mean, it's good too. Halo has always been kind of Halo. This one's got a little bit, I've seen it compared to, does Titanfall have a hookshot? Hookshot in that game?
Well, there's a zip line, yeah, that you can shoot up and grab. But I would say it reminds me more of Doom Eternal with the shotgun.
Yeah, but that's even weird for that one too. You know what I mean? Like both of those got like, so this is a good example. Like, was there a game where there was like a scorpion like grapple shot that was like, oh man, that's cool, let's put it in all the first person shooters that come out in 2021.
I think, if I remember, it's been so long since I played Titanfall 2, but I think you could hook shot somebody and just reel in and kick him in the face.
Yeah
But that died, you know, that didn't really pick up. Nobody was really like,
oh. Maybe.
But what they did pick up on was the wall running and wall jumping and that fast pace. That's when Call of Duty tried, I think it was one of the Black Ops games or whatever, tried doing the same thing. But then you have Doom Eternal, and everyone really liked how that double barrel shotgun, spearhead, blow them in half, whatever. And then now you got merge of this. Yeah.
Maybe it's like an Elf situation. So you've seen the movie Elf, right?
Full disclaimer, I don't like that movie.
What's wrong with you?
No, I get so much crap over that, but I do not like it.
That movie is great. I don't think we have time to like,
oh, man,
to roast you about that movie. But so maybe there's a guy that comes in when they can't figure out what they need to do for a game, and he's got a book of ideas, right? And so they were working on Doom Eternal, they're like, it's just missing something. It's just not right. And so the guy comes in with his book of ideas. He's like, well, I got this hookshot idea. It's pretty good. And they're like, yes, perfect. And then he goes and they're working on Halo Infinite, and they're like working on the multiplayer. We're like, yeah, it just kind of feels the same. Like we need to do something different, like something new, something fast paced. And the guy comes in, he's like, well, I got this hookshot idea. And it is this guy that just walks around and like pitches the same idea to all the studios and gets paid bank for it. Maybe that's what happened.
Yeah. This book of secrets, he's just capitalizing on every one of them over and over again. Here comes Jimmy. He's got that book.
It's two pages. Well, it's three pages, right? He's got Battle Royale. He's like, oh, that's a good idea. He's got the Battle Pass.
Yep.
It's a good idea. He's got a hookshot. That's a good idea. And then you got deck building. That's a pretty good idea too.
I think you actually just listed all the freaking fads that are going on right now in the gaming market.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, don't forget the loot boxes or cosmetics.
Oh yeah. And then our currency, we need three different currency systems.
Yeah.
And one of them you can't earn, but you're not sure which one that is. And you'll accidentally spend real money because you converted the first currency into the second currency, thinking it was the third currency, so you could get that skin you wanted. But now you screwed it up, and so you're just going to pay $8 for some colored pixels. Welcome to 2021.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're making me feel like video game market's a bunch of bullshit, but...
Well, that's why I got the Playdate. Ain't none of that stuff in there, man. This is old school games.
Mm.
I got delayed, too, till February as well.
Well, you got this thing.
That's what the Playdate is. Adam's holding up his Zelda Game & Watch.
Which?
Did you beat that yet?
No. What?
Have you played it at all?
Yeah.
Did you build a deck?
That's what you have to do in order to open the box. No. I haven't played it as much as I actually thought I was going to play it. But I do absolutely love Zelda, like, hands down, that is one of my favorite. And I think it's great to have it on the go. I'm just surprised at how much I've not actually messed around with it, considering the Mario one. I played with that continuously for some reason. I don't know.
I know what's happened. You're slowly turning into me, Adam.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You were telling me that you got like sucked down a rabbit hole of research and got really excited about was it the resin printer?
Yeah.
And now you're telling me you bought something, but you haven't really used it as much as you thought you might. So I'm pretty sure you're turning into me, my friend.
I've bought video games and never played them.
I almost bought Borderlands 3 today. Because it is on sale for $14 on Steam.
Don't.
It's normally like 50, yeah, 50 bucks.
Don't buy it.
But I'm not going to play it.
Yeah, that's what so I say. You won't play it. It'll. When we get online, we end up having our little cracker box of games that we play, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Until a new one.
And I don't have time for anything else. Yeah. And maybe when I get the Steam Deck, maybe I'll be able to like, more casually sit around and play some stuff.
Solo games is where I make my stride when it comes to handhelds. So I think far as the games that I did not play because, you know, they're single player, that'll probably spike straight up. I'm sure as soon as that comes out, I'll be like, oh, okay, I'm going to go back and play these because I've never had time for it, but I can lay in the bed now and do it.
Well, that's what you're telling yourself. But what's going to happen is you're going to get the Steam Deck and you're like, I didn't really play this thing as much as I thought it would.
I hope not. I really hope
me
that's
too.
Not the case.
Me too.
But I would say based on how much time and hours I've put into the Switch, I would say that I would use it a lot because even like Metroid Dread, I didn't waste any time. I played that damn thing through. But it's accessible to wherever the hell I'm at in this house. So, or if I want to go somewhere and I'm chilling out in the car having to wait for something. But yeah, we'll see. I am crossing my fingers that my two investments within the next 6 months, 3D printer and Steam Deck, are not something that sit on a shelf and don't get used, because I'll be pissed at myself if it does.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. You're gonna queue up a print on the resin printer, and then it's gonna sit on the shelf printing for a couple days. And meanwhile, you're gonna play your Steam Deck.
If the performance is good, I mean that'll be the make or break with it. That really will.
That's the really important thing, is the performance to battery ratio, you know, setting aside controls. We all hope that they nailed the controls.
Yeah.
But yeah, besides those are the three things, I think, is the performance / game support, mm-hmm. battery life, and the controls and the feel of it. I think those are the three most important things.
Which we've had, there's been quite a bit of people review the controls, so I think that sounds solid.
Yeah, they seem like that's been okay.
It's the other two.
Well, so in the demos, the games that were played by those people, I don't think anybody had any complaints on those games.
Yeah.
But that's a cherry-picked selection.
Yeah.
But yeah, we won't really know battery life until we get like full reviews. I don't think the battery life's going to be great, but I'm hoping it's at least like what they said, like 2-3 hours. Mm-hmm. Is the performance sustained if you're on battery versus not?
Yeah.
I would hope so. I'm just planning on getting a really long USB-C cable.
Yeah.
And just have it like locate, maybe have a couple of them or just one, at the very least, but have other ones like strategically located throughout the house where I might play. You know what
these
I mean?
These are play spots.
So you can just like, yeah, just plop the cable in there and I'm good to go.
PlayStations.
I don't have to worry about it. Exactly.
No, it's on that same point though, like the Xbox Game Pass, the Kishi. Single player games, I dive into those only if they're like Marvel's Avengers. They're beat 'em up games, right? They don't require accuracy, but any of the games that require actually like first person shooters, stuff like that, it just doesn't, the latency and the controls is just enough to where it's kind of more of a pain in the ass than it is enjoyable.
Yeah. I tried to play Halo 4 the other day on my Kishi on my iPhone 13 Pro. So it's a pretty good, it's not the biggest screen you can get, but it's a big screen.
Yeah.
It's not the mini. It's a big screen. I tried to play it on that and it was the same thing. Like you said, I just couldn't get the accuracy right. I kept missing stuff and would die fairly quickly on normal. So I just got frustrated. I was like, can't play this. And I tried playing with my Elite controller paired via Bluetooth on my MacBook Air.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, the Bluetooth latency was so bad. Because it adds an extra like 20-30 milliseconds, right?
Right.
We had this conversation with the Amazon Luna controller or whatever, and how they could like kind of cheat
with the Wi-Fi
because that can, it communicates directly to the server as opposed to going through Bluetooth,
yeah,
where there's more latency, and then the Bluetooth communicates with the server at that point, or the actual game client itself communicates with the server,
right,
after the Bluetooth latency, so. Yeah, it's disappointing, but I'm hoping the Steam Deck can actually fill that gap.
That's what I'm excited about, because the latency won't be there as far as your controls the screen, right?
And it's just all those Game Pass games, though. Like
that's,
I could be able to play them.
Yeah, that is something that I really do hope they bridge that gap. I hope that the Game Pass becomes accessible or something to their OS. I don't know. Whatever the hell they got to do, I hope that happens. Because,
yeah, I just don't. I don't see how that would happen, because there would have to be a Game Pass client for SteamOS, right?
Yeah.
So that it could be displayed. But who's going to write that? Microsoft's not going to write that,
right?
Unless the Steam Deck just becomes like a console competitor. They're not gonna write a client for that, because that's the only way you can get to play the games, right? Not talking about streaming, right? We're talking about playing on the device.
Yeah, native.
Native. That's the only way that you're gonna be able to get access to the games. So if the games themselves weren't written natively for SteamOS, but they could still run through the Proton layer and work, that would be a solved problem. But the problem is I don't know if there's a way for you to install like the Windows client on the Steam Deck itself without booting into Windows, which we've already talked about.
Yeah. I don't know.
The good thing is like certain games like Master Chief Collection, You can still buy those on Steam, right?
But does it launch? Do you have to have Microsoft's launcher?
Ooh, I didn't think about that. Games with certain launchers.
Yeah, that
don't actually run via the Steam launcher.
Right.
That's a good question. There's a good number of games that do that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially EA games.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yep. Because
to be
hell, even the Game Pass does that. You launch EA games through Game Pass and it pulls up their launcher.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's some of that stuff seems really rocky, like we may have invested on something as like a 50-50 crapshoot.
See, I didn't buy it for that. I bought it assuming the worst. I'm just going to play Crusader Kings on it. That's all I'm playing.
That's a pretty expensive tool for a single game.
Look, I love that game, and I can never find the time or make myself after I've been sitting at my desk for 8 hours play Crusader Kings on my computer. So if I can just like lay on the couch and play that, my God.
I don't think you have friends anymore.
I don't have friends now. Just got like a handful of them.
You go into that mode and you don't talk to us anymore, then I'm going to have to come square you out, man.
So, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. This has been the gaming edition since we don't have Ryan this week. We get all of our gaming talk in until he comes back.
Yeah, we'll catch up with Hawkeye and Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I need to watch Hawkeye. I haven't started that yet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, catch you next week. Say goodbye, Adam.
See y'all later.
Thanks for listening. Go to diversion.fm to subscribe and listen weekly in your podcast player of choice. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again, and see you next week.